Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See TNCs. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back to part two of my discussion with Harry, all about Macbeth. Last time we ended off, we were actually just concluding talking about the first act of this five-part play.
One of Shakespeare's shortest.
One of Shakespeare's shortest tragedy. Because there was simply so much to say about it. And, you know, a lot of the historical context with James I as well. A lot to say about just the introduction of the witches and the supernatural. And I believe the discussion where we last left off, we were talking about the fact that King Duncan is now in Macbeth's castle. Mm-hmm. He now has the king in his midst, and despite all of the, Macbeth goes through it and he rationalizes in his head, he weighs up the pros and cons of both of the things, and it's like, you know, well, he's a very gracious king, he gives to me very generously, I'm in his trust, he's also a guest under my roof, and, you know, all these sorts of things. However, I am an ambitious man, and my wife really likes it when I'm an ambitious man. Mm-hmm. If I'm not an ambitious man, then she threatens my... she makes jokes about my manhood. Stephen Greenblatt, actually, in the Norton completed edition that sits on my desk, he had a wonderful way of describing Lady Macbeth's tactics, which was just to say she employs sexual terrorism against Macbeth.
As many women do. Well, that's interesting, because I want to bring up something. So since the last discussion that we had on it, I have since watched a film that came highly recommended, which was the 2015 Macbeth adaptation starring Michael Fassbender as Macbeth. Now, it was a very interesting adaptation, and we will come into some of the other aspects of the adaptation as we go along in the story.
Sure.
I would actually recommend it just to start off with. I thought it was a good film. But it does really lean quite heavily in the first third, the first act of the film, on that sexual element that she is trying to manipulate him with her sexuality by just having it so that the discussion that they have in the play, where he comes to her with the idea after he's already sent the letter and she's trying to convince him, she basically like gets him to have sex with her,
right,
and delivers her reasoning for why he should go ahead with it whilst they're in the middle of sex.
Very persuasive.
It really does do a number on him.
Yeah.
It really does do a number on him. But there's a number of other recontextualizations and kind of reordering of some of the scenes, and a lot of culling of scenes that goes on in that film that made it a very interesting adaptation. But I'll get onto that as it becomes relevant.
So Macbeth decides that he's not going to go through with this. He weighs up all of the moral considerations. He knows that what he's going to be doing is evil and that there's no justification for it beyond his own ambition. And so he tells his wife. And his wife, Lady Macbeth, instantly compares him to someone who's been out drinking all night, woken up from a hangover, and forgotten the thing that they were supposed to have done. Right? Is what she's like, are you hungover? But Macbeth basically says, well, look, my opinions are very high of me right now. Everyone likes me. I'm doing very well.
I'm a thane now.
There's no need to rock the boat.
You know, I've already had a bigger title bestowed on me.
Yes.
Like, what more could you want, dear?
Yes.
But as ever, it's never enough.
It's never enough. And so, but it's interesting as well, because then when she goads him and she starts to prey down on him further, all he actually comes back with is, what if we should fail? Right? That's all he really has to say in response to her attacks on him. And she simply says, well, then we won't fail. You know.
Yeah, it's interesting that he's not presenting a principled or moral argument.
Given that he's just thought of one, literally two pages prior.
Yes, it becomes almost that he was hoping that she would present the moral argument why he shouldn't do it. He was expecting her to take a kind of like a very feminine role of trying to pull him back from the edge, whereas instead she's willing to just push him straight off in absence of that kind of mitigating factor. he's just like, well, you know, I might get caught. I might get caught. And it kind of shows that he, for all of the internal conflict that Macbeth is known for, his overriding passion, his desire was to go for it.
Absolutely. And I think there's also an element of Lady Macbeth's character as well that definitely harkens back to a character from ancient Greece of Clytemnestra, the wife of Agamemnon, which is a character that Stelios and I talked a lot about when we did the Orestia. And one of her things is just a clear resentment of her own femininity, that she wants to be the one carrying the knife. When she says, my battlements, she wants to be the man in this situation, and she wants to kill her own femininity. And so from her point of view, she's more and more frustrated seeing her husband not live up to the ideal of what she thinks a man is in her own head.
Yeah, I think we mentioned this in the last discussion, but just to reiterate if I did, there is an interesting parallel with modern sexual dynamics that we see today. I've seen it suggested that one of the reasons that women have become less feminine and become more masculine is not only due to the overwhelming force of propaganda and feminism on them, this idea that they should become the man of their own life and the man of their own relationship, but also because of the overwhelming feminization of men as well, which we see in a number of factors. Biologically, we see it with reducing levels of testosterone generation on generation. But with men occupying less of a masculine space, it seems that one of the psychological effects of that is unconsciously women are trying to fulfill that role themselves. And one of the reasons that they may behave so brazenly in doing so is almost trying to goad the men around them into, like, are you going to step up and be a man, or am I going to have to keep doing this job for you?
Yeah.
And it's sort of shit test. Yeah, it's a massive shit test. And Lady Macbeth seems, and going back to Agamemnon's wife as well, there seems to be a recognition throughout history in these tales that we tell tell that femininity can be corrupted in that way if the sexual roles are overlapping too much, if there is not enough sexual divergence between the way that men and women are and the way that they behave, women can assume this kind of pastiche of masculinity.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, one of the absolute darkest passages from the entire text comes from this particular scene as well at the end of Act One, where Lady Macbeth says, I have given suck and know how tender 'tis to love the babe that milks me. I would, while it was smiling in my face, have plucked my nipple from its boneless gums and dashed the brains out, had I so sworn as you have just done to this. And so there's a lot in there. First of all, there is a revelation that Lady Macbeth has actually been a mother at some point in her life. Now, what's very interesting about this, and this is the first thing to explore, later on it's commented on that Macbeth himself does not have any children.
Macduff says this explicitly after the revelation of his own children and family being murdered.
So what are we to take away from this? Are we supposed to assume that the shared child that they once had has since passed away and therefore Macbeth has no children? Or is this perhaps a child that Lady Macbeth had from a previous marriage?
Well, I mean, again, it's up to interpretation. The interpretation that the 2015 adaptation presents is the film starts with a huge recontextualization of the whole plot by having the opening scene not be King Duncan having it relayed to him the events of the battle that that Macbeth and Banquo were able to overcome the usurpers from Norway and the Than of Cawdor on. Instead, it starts with what appears to be a flashback to a funeral being held by Lady Macbeth and Macbeth himself, where they appear to be doing the last rites of their son, who is shown to be maybe a toddler, maybe 3 or 4 years old at most. Very, very young. So it does seem to recontextualize everything that happens afterwards as potentially them trying to fulfill a void within their own life that has been left with the absence of this child passing. Now, within the play, outside of this adaptation, that is an interpretation that you could bring. Perhaps in the absence of anything grander, anything more transcendent, this passing of generation to generation to occupy themselves with on the trauma that resulted from losing their child. Perhaps that's what's motivating them to do this. They can't have, they're not having any more children. They're not passing a legacy down. This is Macbeth's big chance to have a legacy. And Lady Macbeth is riding at his side because of that, because she feels that same drive.
Yeah.
That is interesting. I don't know necessarily how much it would add if it was her kind of sneakily admitting to having an affair in the past, except just emphasizing what an awful devilish schemer she is.
Yeah, well, absolutely that. And obviously the idea of her saying that she could take this babe who's just been at a nipple, see it smiling and dash its brains out, if that's what it took to do this, again, just speaks to what a deplorable monster she wants to be, right? That she's choosing actively to be the monster.
But can she follow through with it?
Yes. And there's interesting tells, actually, throughout the text that perhaps she couldn't have followed through with it at all. And actually, Macbeth did something that she wouldn't have been able to do when the time came to it. So we get to the start of Act Two, and night descends, and we know it because Banquo declares that it is night at the beginning, which I imagine would have been very helpful to a Jacobean audience in the middle of the day in the Globe.
You've got to say a lot of things that the audience isn't going to pick up on unless you say it.
Yeah, so it's nighttime now. And one of the interesting things here is this is where we're introduced to Banquo's son Fleance as well. And we see that they have a very, very close relationship with one another, you know, a very, very fatherly father-son. And Banquo immediately gives his sword to Fleance, because he was like, I'm done with this for the day, take it away from me. But upon hearing stirrings and seeing Macbeth enter the stage, Banquo says, oh, give me my sword back.
Oh yeah, as soon as the confirmation of, oh, you were promised to be Thane, and you got that title, Banquo can immediately see that this might go wrong.
Yes.
That Macbeth might be consumed by his passions and his desires, his ambition. And again, there's that theme, isn't there? Everybody that Macbeth draws himself up against and betrays and attacks is a family man. Duncan has his children, Malcolm and Donald Bane. Banquo has Fleance. Macduff has his large family. And again, it is explicitly stated that Macbeth does not have any children, whether through Lady Macbeth having an affair and them not having children, or through them already having a child and that child dying from unknown causes. It's a pointed theme, this idea that perhaps someone who isn't a family man can be overcome with dark, like his ambitions can be twisted and made dark.
Absolutely. And to go back to something that you were saying in part one as well, that Macduff's quest to avenge his family is seen as a moral crusade, something actually justifiable. And you talked about this a lot as well with Amleth.
Amleth and the Northmen. The quest for avenging your own family members who have been betrayed is always portrayed as this kind of virtuous bringing of cosmic justice. You're taking the cosmic, transcendent, godly order and putting it right. Whereas what Macbeth does, what Amleth's uncle does, and Hamlet's uncle does, these are all seen as treacherous. They're done for nothing grander than human ambition. They take the natural godly order and put it out of sorts. Whereas Macduff and Amleth and other similar characters are always seen as making things right.
Yeah. And so we get to that very, very famous monologue. Is this a dagger that I see before me? And or is it but a dagger of the mind? And, you know, he goes through that. And you can tell in the way that he's giving this language, he's psyching himself up. You know, he's absolutely psyching himself up so that he can go ahead and do this. So just to say as well, his wife, Lady Macbeth, has given some wine, some very strong wine, to the servants outside of King Duncan's door, so they won't be disturbing anything, and of course are going to pin the murder onto those poor two unassuming drunken boys as well. Bad night out on the drink, I'd say. And Macbeth goes in there and, of course, does the deed. Now, one thing to say, of course, about this as well is that Lady Macbeth's entire framing of this is that this is the manliest thing that her husband can possibly do. Is it, though? I mean, murdering an old man in his sleep when he can't fight back. And
Who trusted you?
Who trusted
you? Who is in your own home?
It's the most cowardly, the most snivelling.
Yeah, it's what a pathetic coward does. A man of no honour.
Yes.
It's
nothing manly about it at all.
It'd be like if you're out on the lash and your missus is there, and some guy insults you, and instead of you going up and like confronting him and saying like, "I want you to apologise and say it to my face," your missus is just like sucker punch him when his back's turned. Mm. No, that's cowardly.
Yeah, absolutely. It's not cool, bro.
Yeah, it's just not on.
If you enjoyed this piece of premium content from the Lotus Eaters, head to our website where you can find more.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See TNCs 21+. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.